The title is clunky, but the wine talk is smooth. You're listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. And I have to say, ain't nobody been as nice as I think as the spread, the food, the wine. I'm joined by Elizabeth Davies from ED Wine Company and also Harbor 60. Liz, thank you so much for doing the podcast.
Hey, Matt, thanks for having me.
So, like, we've got three different wines. You've got meat and cheese set out. So, what's great is we're gonna. I want to talk about you. I want to talk about your wine company and working at Harbor 60, but then we'll give little wine notes for all the wines, because you know how much everyone enjoys you know giving a nose and palate and basically, you know, gritting wine just blind. It's always fun.
I love it. It's always good.
Yeah,
it's always good. This isn't really blind, but
no, I was about to say I said blind. I meant more just on the spot.
No, it's good. Being put on the spot is good. Keeps us sharp.
Yeah. Do you ever get intimidated by the blind tasting?
Always. Even if I'm just doing it alone at home, always.
Really?
Every time. Every time my hands are shaky. Every time my heart goes fast. Every single time.
Yeah.
It's never gotten easier.
Isn't it funny? Because how long have you worked in wine, in any sort of capacity?
Well, I've been in the restaurant business since I was 16.
Yeah.
But I was, and then started as a bartender when I was 18. I got my level 3s in WSET 6 years ago.
Yep.
5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that helps answer the question at all, but it never stops. Like, I never stop having nerves.
I remember when I did my WSET diploma, and for the, you know, the tasting grid, I picked up the first one and my hand was shaking so much. And of course, what did I do? I still gamed the system. I smelt the first one and I looked at it. I'm like, oh, yes, it's Spanish wines. So then I steered everything to Spain.
Of course.
And then I got to the first red wine and I smelt it and tasted it. I'm like, uh-oh, this is Loire Cab Franc. I'm like, there is no doubt in my mind. So then I had to go back and retaste the others. It was so nerve-wracking.
I don't even want to tell you the terrible things I've done on a tasting grid. It's awful.
Come on, give me one of your worst.
Well, I can give you the worst. Oh. I can tell you the worst.
Yeah.
So the worst. I've always been like actually an okay taster. Mm-hmm. I'm not excellent. I'm not bad. I've always been like solid though. Like pretty like solid. Never had the confidence to back it up, but
yeah.
The numbers on the marks were always solid grades. And then I went to write my certified exam and I was practicing because I heard that you tend to run out of time.
Yeah.
So I gotten every, I could blind a wine in 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And that was what I got down.
That's impressive.
2 minutes, 2 minutes. Well, this was my practice, like knowing that on the game day there'd be nerves, so it might be later. And I went through and I had 2 minutes and then I nailed them all on each wine, or finished them all on each wine. And then I sat there and then like, well, let me go back and make sure. And I went back and I changed everything.
Oh no. Did you really?
Ask me if I passed the tasting or not.
Did you pass the tasting?
I did not pass the tasting. Yeah. So I had to do it again. Yeah. But I learned an important lesson where it's to be confident in yourself.
Yeah.
Just do it.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, you have to be confident.
Yeah.
You've got to trust your notes, trust your instincts.
Trust your knowledge,
yeah.
Right? Like
you've
trained for it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's kind of funny to say that you've trained to drink wine, but
you have.
Yeah.
Like you so have, whether you're in tasting groups,
yeah.
Whether you're on your own, or even just when you're at a restaurant. I mean,
yeah.
How many, like you probably always, every time you drink a wine, you might even just drink it for pleasure, but you probably at least have 10 seconds of, I'm considering what I'm drinking.
Oh, for sure.
And it's
easily.
Probably more than that.
Easily.
So I want to start with this. Is it weird that when I went to your website,
yeah.
Is it weird that when I go to any sort of alcohol related websites, I still put in my exact birthday?
Me too.
So do you do that as well?
Me too. And every once in a while, I'm just like, why am I scrolling all the way down?
All right. May
29th. Also, why isn't my age a little closer to the top?
Yeah,
I guess I'm getting older. But yeah, no, I always do the exact same thing.
It's just, it's so dumb. Like, no one's checking. There isn't like the internet police are waiting there going, excuse me, sir, you put 1981 and you're 1975.
I know. And I have that on my website, obviously, to like protect me, you know, legally or just to be more responsible.
Is that what it's for?
That's exactly what it's for.
Okay.
Yeah, it's exactly what it's for. So the you know, the online community and the AGCO wants you to be, obviously, making sure you're not selling to minors. But
yeah. Yeah,
I know there's some miners are out there buying some nice bottles of wine. I'm pretty sure they can figure out how to fake a date.
Yeah, well, it's like anything. It doesn't matter what it is. Like, you know, it could, you know, any sort of wine website. Sometimes it's just, are you of age in your country? Click yes.
Yeah.
All right, come on in.
Come, you know,
there's
on
really
in.
Not
we're
a lot
covered.
Of,
we're yeah. covered. Yeah.
So what's the first wine that we're drinking?
So I opened the Sterling Chardonnay for you. I wish I had the bottle in front because I
think it's
forget.
It's,
you
I think
at
it's
the vintage?
What's that?
Did you remember the vintage?
I believe it was 2014.
That's what I
Sperling,
thought too.
The Sperling one, which is great because I interviewed Ann Sperling. So this is
which
her.
Which is exactly why I wanted to open it, because I loved listening to the interview. I thought she was awesome.
Yeah, she was great.
You're always awesome, of course.
Not always. I do my best. but yeah, so we're drinking her Chardonnay from Okanagan. And what I love about is this, the nose is interesting. Like, yeah, I call this. Now, this is going to sound douchey, and I apologize. Slightly cooked honey. Like, this is like slightly cooked. Like, if you took an almond and coated it with slightly cooked honey, that's one of the first things I get on the nose. And I'm well aware how douchey that
that's
sounds.
Okay. I won't point it out then. You mm-hmm. obviously yeah. know where you stand.
Yeah.
I think it's lovely. I think the way it's been touched by oak is beautiful. Mm-hmm. When I first opened the wine, once I gave it a little swirl, some of this... what I was first smelling kind of drifted off, and this is just a beautiful Chardonnay from the Okanagan. I just love it. I tried it for the first time in a blind tasting with a friend of mine who spent some time at West,
yep.
and so she brought a lot of wines from the Okanagan back, and sort of taste it blind for the first time. I was like, oh, I really like this, and then we revealed the wines. I was like, oh, awesome. I have some downstairs
in
my cellar.
Oh, that's
I was
great.
Like, that's amazing.
Hooray,
I was so
I'm
happy.
In.
Yeah, I was like, oh, good. I've been meaning to open that up, and here it is. It's beautiful. So yeah. I opened it up tonight for you.
What do you get? What do you get on either nose or bottom? And we're not doing full court grid. Just,
no.
You know, just a couple thoughts
on
the wine.
Oh, it's nice. It's pomaceous fruit. The touch of oak is beautiful. The same almonds you're talking about. I just think it's beautiful.
Yeah. You know, it's one thing I realized? I'm just talking about like wine notes. I realize, like, when I do sports in my normal job, I make fun of sports. I make fun of how serious people are about it. Like, you know, I like to try to make it more fun. But I've realized this. When it comes to wine, like my posts on Instagram, I'm so serious. Like, I give the most, like, just these hardcore notes. And my girlfriend actually said, have fun with it. Like,
yeah.
It's wine. Why aren't you being you? Which is a little more irreverent. And I try to be funny. Sometimes I succeed. Sometimes I fail. And I realize I take wine so seriously and I have so much respect for it that I almost don't want to make jokes about it. And I realize I probably should do that more.
See, I feel like I try and find like this balance of taking it seriously, because obviously we've dedicated so much of our life to it. So to then think it's a joke is kind of crazy. But at the same time, it's a beverage.
Yeah.
Anyways, I'm always trying to find the balance between the two, because it's insane. It's years of history. It's geography. It's everything. You name it. It's art. It's law. It's everything.
Yep.
But at the same time, when someone's like, oh, it tastes like almond skin, which is actually a really great way to describe something. But when was the last time you ever like shaved an almond and ate just the skin?
Well,
like,
I mean, it's been at least a week.
Okay, you are douchier than I am. I've never done it.
Or, you know, semi-bruised green apple.
Yeah, exactly.
But it is, you're right, it's hard to, because you want to straddle that line, because the point of this podcast is wine is fun, let's make it less intimidating, let's not take it seriously, but then I'll find myself getting into taking it seriously trap, because it's everything you said, and I realize that what's in this glass, who was picking, like, there was people that were working their ass off.
Big
picking
time.
The grapes and insecurity from the winemakers. I hope we got it at the right time. And I hope it's a good vintage. And, but like, there's so much blood, sweat, and tears that goes into this glass that, you know, sometimes I might take it more seriously than I should.
No, that's exactly why I do take it seriously. It's like so many hands have touched this wine before it gets into the glass. And then if you think about the winemakers alone, people ask me once in a while if I would ever be a winemaker. I'm like, no.
No.
You talk about my nerves with blind tasting? Like, never mind, like, the vulnerability of a winemaker?
Yeah.
Not a chance. I feel like you have to be made of steel. And I have a lot of things in me, but I don't have that kind of thick skin.
Well,
even though I think I have a thick skin, but I couldn't be a winemaker.
And vulnerable. When to make the wine, and just when you're in the winery, you know, how much, like, say with a Chardonnay, how much Bethanage are you going to do, or, you know, like Malo, and what the reds, you know, like, just how long are the skin contact, like, just all these sorts of things. It's a lot.
Yeah. It's a lot.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about your wine company. ED Wine Company. How long have you been doing it for?
We've been doing it a little over a year.
Yep.
And it started for a couple of reasons. I'm sure you get the same thing. I feel like a lot of somms or people that just know wine get the same thing. I would get like 5 texts a day, mm-hmm. being like, I need a wine, or I'm tired of my old wine, or I need a gift from my boss, or I'm going to this dinner party, or what have you, or I'm going to this restaurant and I'm entertaining a client. What do I do?
Yep.
And I'm more than happy to answer those all the time. But I saw there was obviously a need for people that just needed a little help. I think some people don't realize they can ask people in the store. The store people are often can be quite knowledgeable. Not everybody is educated, but there's always somebody who is, who knows a lot about wine. And then that combined with the same way you came over to the house tonight, and I just want to open everything for everybody. I want to be like, try this, try this, try this, try this. It's just in me. I love it, and I find it so fascinating. But I'm just not baller enough to be able to do that to everybody. And I also, like, when you come over, you end up leaving super drunk, and I don't like that necessarily either.
Yeah.
Because we all have to live a life, and we have responsibilities afterwards. So I feel like if I can send some wine to your house once a month with things I feel are interesting to know about the wine.
Well, tell people what it is that you do, because I should have started there. What is ED Wine Company?
Yeah, so it's a monthly wine subscription. So you get 4 bottles, or you can customize something else if you'd like. But typically speaking, people do 4 bottles. You can do all white, all red, or a mixture. And they come to your house once a month.
Yep.
And they come with some tasting notes. But it's not, I think, hopefully, it's not just some generic tasting notes about the almond skins and the lemon and the pear, but you know, there's a little bit of knowledge sprinkled in there too about the wine region, so before you know it, you know a couple things about wine too.
That's fantastic, because you feel, I think, like, you, I mean, you work at Harbor 60, and the way you sell wine is you sell more of the story, or you sell at least as much the story as the wine. And for people, I think they'll appreciate, enjoy the wine more if they know, oh yeah, it's a small mom and pop, and you know, they were farmers and then gave it up, and then they bought 5 hectares of land, and now they're making Syrah.
Definitely.
You know, and just I think you enjoy the wine more because you do, you have a greater sense of ownership with it.
Yeah. Or even, like, for example, a lot of people are like, oh, I really like Chardonnay. Oh, like, but I hate Chablis. And like, oh, well, Chablis happens to be Chardonnay.
Yeah.
You know, like, not a lot of people know that these certain regions are these certain grapes. So hopefully over time, as you get your packages, you'll be like, oh, well, I know that, and I know this. And now when I'm having dinner with my boss, I'm, you know, I have a little more confidence in what I'm saying is the hope. But who knows? I think that's working out okay. But,
yeah. How do you decide? Like, what is your process in deciding, like, which wines you're going to include?
It's always tough, because it's the same way that when you were coming over here tonight, mm-hmm. I literally had like 10 bottles of wine I wanted to open.
That's very nice of you.
Yeah. And we can still get there, but so far we've done 4.
Yeah.
So far we've opened 4. But it's trying to narrow it down, and then trying to find the balance of, these are the wines I love, because what I'm doing is I'm putting my name on, these are wines I really love.
Yeah.
But I also want to give you some variety. So there's a whole bunch of wines that, like, I love Pinot Noir, but maybe you like super full-bodied wines. Maybe you like Amarone. Maybe you like Rapasso. So I want to make sure to include those as well, even if, you know, from time to time, even if they're not necessarily like my go-to.
Yeah.
But if I find one that I find is particularly special, I try and include it. But the mix package, you know, you'll get a variety. It tends to be a more full-bodied red, a light-bodied red, a more full-bodied white, and a more light-bodied white. But, and then I try to pepper it from all around the world.
Yeah. And we'll get to a little bit just what you're drinking now, your own tastes, and things like that.
Yeah.
Why do you think that wine has always been surrounded by so much pretension?
Oh.
It's a big question. I don't know.
It is a big question. So I feel like...
And it's not as bad. By the way, it's not as bad now as it was. And I think barriers get broken down. You get access to more information, from simple YouTube videos to... You know, there's so many great websites. I would recommend to everyone the Court of Master Sommelier.
Oh, it's the best.
It's in, you know, it's going to cost you about $100 a year. But
Guildsom.
Sorry, yeah, the Guildsom.
Yeah.
I always get the two.
I know, me too.
Yeah. But yeah, the Guildsom website, fully recommend. You know, Wine Folly is a good
Wine
one.
Wine Folly is really good, especially when you're first getting started.
Yeah.
It's really good.
Yeah. That's, I've recommended some of their books before. But, and that helps. But, mm-hmm. Or maybe I'll turn it around. Instead of saying, why has wine always been surrounded by pretension? Why do you think? Because you worked at the Keg for ages.
Yeah.
You work at Harbor 60.
Yeah.
So that's two very different places. But why is it that people are always intimidated by wine?
Well, I think there's a lot of you don't know, right? Like, what's this other wine we have in front of us? Savigny Les Bonnes.
Mm-hmm.
Les Bonnes. What is that? You know, you're there on a business meeting, you look at it, you're like, duh, you don't know.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of pretension comes because you have to cover up the fact that you don't know. So there's a masking that you don't really know what you're talking about.
An insecurity.
Yeah, big time. Or of people that have figured it out, be like, oh, well, I do know.
Yeah.
But I think wine has been really pretentious, but there's the other end of the spectrum too, where like my neighbor next door, he came here from Italy. He's been living here for probably 60 years. He makes his own wine. He's passionate about his own wine.
Yeah.
And it's not remotely pretentious over there.
No.
You know, it's done in the garage.
Yeah.
He gives us a bottle, and it's in an old plastic Sambuca bottle like that he gives to us. He's like, this is my wine. It's great. And you're like, thank you so much, Tony. I appreciate it. So I feel like there is a pretentious world, but then there's the other end of the world where it's like, it just brings people together.
Yeah,
right?
It does.
Like wine and food is just a really good way to spend time with people.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's, I think, you know, so to me, I get that it's pretentious. I try not to be pretentious. I hope I'm not.
No.
I mean, people get afraid who aren't in the wine world to bring wine over to our house sometimes.
I mentioned that question because here is on your website, ED Wine was created because I wanted to share the love of wine while breaking down the pretentious walls and confusion that can surround wine. Mm-hmm. That's part of your core philosophy,
yeah.
Which is a fantastic core philosophy. And it's I think that should be the philosophy of every somm in every restaurant, is we're going to help you with your love of wine, and we're going to get rid of the insecurity, and we're going to try to knock down the pretentious walls a little bit. And we're going to explain to you that if you got the Savigny Les Bonnes, that is going to be that's going to be Pinot Noir. Why? Because if you see it's red, and if it's from Burgundy, it's Pinot Noir, and that's all it's going to be.
That's it. You can keep it that simple.
You can keep it that simple. And then they're like, "Well, why does Premier Cru mean?" Okay, now we're going to have to get a little more lessons.
Yeah,
but we'll get there eventually.
But again, it's cool.
Yeah,
I don't know if you found this when you were studying too. Like when I first started studying, I don't know if it was just the couple of classes that I was in, but when I first started studying, Emma was just trying to like one up one another. Or proved that they knew more than the person next to them.
Yeah.
But then I was like, oh man, maybe I know nothing about wine. Or like maybe I'm not gonna be able to hack it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was just like, oh no, wait, you're just speaking up when you know the answer.
Yeah.
Whereas like I'm more than happy to raise my hand and be like, I don't know that, or I haven't looked at that region in a long time, or I forget. Or I like any number of things. Or maybe I've never looked at it at all. Or maybe I got lucky and that wasn't on my exam. But there are times, I mean, maybe it's just me, maybe you'll give me another humbling moment, but hopefully you've done this too. But like, there are regions where you just don't work with anymore and you get rusty on, or your brain is slow that one day and isn't making the connections. And
it bothers me how much I've forgotten because I don't work in wine every day.
Mm-hmm.
The amount of stuff that will slip out where I'll forget. You know, the major regions in Rioja. I'm like, oh, it's Baja, it's Alta. And like, oh God, what's the, and then like, you know, and I'll forget that. And then name five producers in Ribera del Douro. And, you know, well, there's Pincus, and, you know, and then eventually shit, I'm like, oh God, as one of the first people I interviewed, Emily Pierce, who, you know, is soon going to be a master somm.
Yeah.
And she's at the York Club, which is a pretty crazy place to be the head of wine for, and she was the head of wine at Canoe. Like, and she said it best. She's like, wine is all about humility.
Oh,
you
big
know,
time.
The think the you think you know, and then you do an exam, and they ask you, okay, you know, tell us the mountains around Priorat, and then you forget, and then okay, you fail. And yeah. It's like, well, you know, that got to start over again. Oh, no, it's very hard. And even in the diploma level, you know, when we'd be doing tastings in class, you could still see people were sheepish about, okay, what do you get here? Yeah. So, yeah, that humility is, and people get nervous all the time. But, yeah, I found that interesting as that being the opening sentence for the core philosophy for
ED Wine
Company.
It makes people nervous. And the hope is that we can just focus on how it's fun. And which I know you're of that philosophy too.
Oh right? It's supposed to be fun. All right, let's try the second wine.
Wine too.
Which,
here.
By the way, and the second one I recognize. This feels. Is this Pierce?
Nicholas Pierce, whom I don't know, but I seem to have been moving a lot of his product lately because I feel like everything they bring in is really wonderful.
They do. They bring in good stuff. And Nicholas, if you're listening, I want all you guys on the pod somewhere down the road. But we are drinking, my glasses are going to be Premier Cru from Sauvigny Le Bon and Le Haute. Is it Charon? How would you, because my French is horrible. Yeah.
Yeah. Les Hautes Charons.
And so just for people
my
here.
French Canadian coming into play there.
Yeah. Here's, for Burgundy, it's well, I don't want to say it's simple, but there are four levels. There is, you know, your table wine, which can be grapes from pretty much everywhere. Your village level, smaller area where it's focused from. Premier Cru, which means it's from one vineyard. And Grand Cru, which means it's from the best of the vineyards.
The vineyard. Vineyards. Yeah,
it's from the vineyard. So this Premier Cru, which again, there's only it represents 5-6% of all Burgundian wines is at this level. So thank you very much for opening this.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure. I love this.
And this wine will, people that are new, and none of this one I'm going to say is pretentious, like, oh, well, you're new. But it's like anything. You get into it. Yeah. But this is a funky wine. This is not a fruit-forward, easy, accessible wine. This is a wine you got to work a little bit for. But once you get into it, you'll really appreciate. Yeah, like just the barnyard, the mushroom, like the mushroom on this fella.
Oh, it's mushroom. Yeah, mushroom. So much mushroom. Mm-hmm. But the fruit that I do find in it is like sour cherry. Oh, like there's a
more on the palate, I guess, than on the nose.
Yeah, not so much on the nose, but on the palate. Like if you live in Toronto, there's a bakery called Mabel's Bakery. They have a few locations around town, and they have a cherry pie, but it is like a sour cherry pie. There's like no sugar, but it does not taste super sweet.
Yeah.
And that's what this wine tastes like to me.
Yeah.
It just tastes like really tart red cherries.
Yep.
It's so good. I just love it. I think it's beautiful.
I've bought some of their product, and this makes me excited. Now, I think because this vintage, I think, is 14 as well.
No, they're all 14.
Yeah.
They're all 14 tonight. Yep. Sorry, I just saw they're all 14.
Oh, please. You never need. Here's the thing. You never need to apologize when opening Premier Cru Burgundy. But no, this wine is great because you got to work for it a little bit, but the fruit is there, and it's this beautiful wine, and there's a lot going on. And, you know, it's going to make you think a little bit, but you're going to enjoy
Whetstone.
The hell out of this wine.
Was that my douchey thing?
What did you say?
Whetstone.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Whetstone's always a good is always a good douchey one,
but it's like so important. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so important.
Mm. How'd you get into wine? Because you said you've been going back. You said you've been working in bars, restaurants since you were 16 years old. How did you get into restaurants at 16?
So my brother was a cook at the Keg.
Yep.
And
which Keg was it?
This was in Ottawa. It's the Keg Manor. Mm-hmm. And I was working my own job where it was quite a comfortable job, but I was just like, well, I'm going to be going to university and I'll be an 18 at university. I'm going to be wanting making a lot of money. I'm like, so I need to get into a restaurant now.
Yep.
So that when I turn 18, they'll promote me.
Oh, smart.
So he got me a job as a hostess.
Yep.
And then I was a hostess. I was a busser. I was a dishwasher. And I worked salads.
Mm-hmm. What does that mean? He works. I mean, I think.
But I worked basically a cold station in the kitchen.
Yeah.
I mean, I did cold appetizers and salads. Mostly I was front of house, though, to be honest. Mm-hmm. And then on my 18th birthday, I got promoted to bartender. And literally my 18th birthday, I was a bartender. And that was how I celebrated my birthday.
Yeah.
And I went to bed that night, and any bartender out there will know what this is like. And I slept with the sound of the chip machine going. Those restaurant nightmares of just being in the weeds. And so that was that. And then I finished high school at 18. I came to Toronto and I got a job at the York Street Keg.
Yeah,
and it was insanely busy. It had just
opened. Oh my God, the York Street Keg.
Yeah.
Is I used to work it off the record.
It was insane.
I used to work it off the record, and our title sponsor was the Keg for great steaks and good friends. See you tonight.
Mm-hmm.
We called for near Christmas to make a reservation for the off the record crew sponsored by the Keg, and they're like, "Yeah, no, we'll see when we can get you in." It's nuts.
It was insane at the time. It was like it was insane, and I just moved to Toronto, and I thought that this is what it was like in restaurants in Toronto, and I was really lucky. Anyway, so I was very fortunate. I fell into a really good job.
Yeah.
And one day, we had a song that was working there, but I guess was looking at the wine list.
Mm-hmm.
And he ordered the wine and handed me the wine list. And I went to the computer and I'm sweating and my heart is racing, kind of like it does with blind tastings. And I was looking at the computer, looking at the wine list, I could not find whatever this gentleman had just said. So I ran to the office, knocked on the door, and I finally found this gentleman who was a sommelier and a manager. And I was just like, this guest has ordered San Pellegrino. Like, I can't find it anywhere. He's just like, we'll just bring a bottle of Perrier. And I thought it was a joke. But the gentleman just happened to be looking at the wine list. And
said, oh, no.
Bring me a bottle. But I'd only ever worked at the Keg.
Yeah.
So I'd only ever served Perrier.
Yeah.
And I, again, still thought it was a joke, brought it to the table, and he was very happy with his sparkling water. And so I learned a couple of things. One, I learned about sparkling water.
There you go.
And two, I realized I need to learn more about wine.
Yeah.
But it was pretty great. This guy, you know, he was the first sommelier. I didn't know a sommelier was a job. Again, I was 18. And
yeah, at 18, I had no idea what wine was. At 18,
no.
I wasn't even. The funny thing is, I didn't even really start drinking until I was 25. High school and university, I actually didn't drink a lot. But anyway,
I was more beer. Like when I first started drinking as like a teenager, it was more beer. But he was great. He would tell me these stories about how like to open like the foil underneath the lip of the bottle. Because back in the day when they would ship wine from Europe, there would be rat poison over top. So the rats on the ships wouldn't get to the wine. And that this way, if a drop dripped over, it wouldn't touch the foil. They wouldn't get rat poison in your drink. And I was just like, oh, that's so cool. And like those stories still stay with me. And then every once in a while, I think about those stories. And I'm like, oh, I need to be better at like telling more stories. Because sometimes I feel like I mute like the wine stories because I just sound, you know, a bit too pretentious. And I hold back a little bit. But the stories are pretty, I don't know.
They're
fun,
cool.
Right? Wines they're stories,
well,
right?
So many of them, like, you know, if it's port or sherry or, you know, claret, you know, which is the British way of calling Bordeaux. And that wasn't for you. That was for people that listen that might not know. You know, there's tons of stories about like why this is made the way it is. And it's cool. And it sometimes involves being on ships for months on end.
Going around the world and coming back. Kind of thing.
So then for you, a lot of it, because a lot of people there was that aha moment, that one bottle. But a lot of it for you was about self-improvement, was about getting better in your profession.
Yeah. And just like being like, oh, there's something here that like they know about that I don't know yet. And literally at the time, like that's when Wolf Blass was like massively popular.
Yeah.
And Jay Lore at the Keg, Jay Still Lore is always super popular. So like, that's what I thought. And like Rosemount Shiraz, I remember that. But again, I was 18 years old, drinking legally, obviously in Ontario. But those were my like entry level wines.
Yeah.
And then later in life, when I was working at Harbor 60, I had a manager be like, you should be a somm. And I was like, oh, no, I can't. Like, I don't know how to taste wine like that. Like, that's crazy. He's like, no, you can learn that. I'm like, no, you can't learn that. Like, people just do that. He's like, no, you learn that.
Yeah. It's like anything else.
I was like, no, like, I can't taste anything. He's like, trust me, you can do it.
Yeah.
And it was pretty cool to have someone just be like, no, you can do this. And that was like my next level.
Yeah. I want to get to Harbor 60 in a second, but it's interesting. Yeah. Some of those wines you mentioned, you know, the Rosemont Shiraz or the J-Lore or the Wolf Blass. I'm not fans of those wines. I will. I'm going through this. I will not order them. I will not. And so I will not drink them. I mean, if I'm somewhere and that's what's being served, I'll say thank you very much. I'll take my glass. I'll sip slowly.
Yeah.
But the importance about wines like that is eventually those can be the entry level wines to get someone into wine. And 100%. Then eventually it opens the door to the next level, which is why I'm always uncomfortable unless it's Fusion or Meiomi. Or any of these wines that have 17 grams of sugar per liter, I have no time for you. But for a lot of those wines, even though I might not drink them now, they're very important for the wine industry because
they're
a great way for people just to get in, to start to explore the space.
It's like talking about, like, I'm not as into music as I once was. Yeah, I run out of time. So I'm not as current with music as possible. But pop music.
Yeah.
I remember when I was really into music, like, pop music is garbage, this is garbage, can't people listen to this? But then I was speaking to a friend of mine who was a full-on musician, and he was just like, no, pop music is really important. Pop music is insanely hard to write. Excuse me. Pop music is like to write something where millions and millions of people love it and can listen to it over and over and over again. You think that's easy? And I was like, oh yeah, that's right. Like, I was so pretentious about it. Like, yeah, pop music is me. It's the same thing. Like, all these mass-produced wines, like, that's a big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not something that we're necessarily going to want to drink, but at one point, unless, I mean, were born with, like, a crazy super palate.
Nope.
And a wildly amazing budget.
At one point, I thought Merlot meant Italian wine. Yeah. So clearly, we all start at zero.
Listen, I thought San Pellegrino was a wine, so I think I'm worse off than you.
But yeah,
I was 18, okay?
Yeah, no. I was a little older than 18 when I still thought Merlot. I was like 21, 22. But yeah, it's a good... That's a really good analogy about how pop music will get you into other music, and the Wolf Blast, if you get into it, and for some people, Wolf Blast, that's all they want. Great.
It's perfect.
Perfect, fine. That's
Leave
what you like.
Leave more Premier Crew for us.
Yeah.
It's perfect.
Yeah, exactly.
If everybody wanted all the Premier Crew of the world, the price would be even higher.
That'd be the worst.
It'd be awesome.
Sometimes I hate when I hear about other areas. And like when China got into Bordeaux, I was just angry. Not at China, but I'm like, wait a minute.
There's more people that want it,
and you're raising the price for the rest of us. Get out of here.
And you have more money than me.
Yeah, exactly. And I did that just strictly because of my own sort of selfishness.
Agreed. I get it.
Harbor 60, it's a very sort of high-end, it's one of the most high-end steak joints in Toronto. It's, what's the wine list like there?
Oh, it's insane. Nick Sam is the wine director there. He's amazing. He would hate that I say that, but I think he's amazing. Mm-hmm. It's a steakhouse, so there's a certain expectation. It's 44 pages.
Yeah.
And like super small font.
Yeah. Hold on for a second. What's the deal with all these restaurants that are small font? Like, I have to now bring out my flashlight app on my phone. It makes me feel so much older.
I was about to say, I think it's because the wine programs are run by people that might be younger. That's all.
They don't understand.
I know. But I just don't think they know yet.
Mm-hmm.
They don't, like, my mom struggles with vision. So I'm like hyper aware of like the lighting in a restaurant being too dark.
Steak joints, too dark.
Always too dark.
And the font is too small.
Yeah, and I have bad hearing. So to me, I'm always like, it's too loud. But like, I'm a millennial and I'm like, it's too loud. And everyone's making fun of me for it. But the wine list is great. It is loads of Napa Cab.
Yep.
Loads of Bordeaux. We have a lot of people that are interested in Italian wines too. So lots of Italian wine as well.
Let me guess. TIG, Barolo would be the two ones I would imagine. Am I wrong?
TIG, I actually don't even know if we have TIG right now.
Really? I figured just because steak joint, you're going to get some of the super.
No, it makes sense.
You're going to get some of the super Tuscans.
Yeah, we definitely have super Tuscans.
Yeah.
We definitely have super Tuscans. I'm just trying to think of right at present if we have Tignanello on the list. We must. But the list is so big and ever changing. That it's, you know, we have a lot of deep vintages too, which is really great. But it's a steakhouse, so you know, a lot of people want big wines to go with big steak. So it makes sense. We don't have a lot of white wines. When we say we don't have a lot, we still have a few hundred bottles of white wines.
Yeah,
we have a large variety of whites. But when you compare it to our red wines, obviously we push mostly red wine.
I would imagine more Chardonnay than anything else, just because it's a little bit. It's a bigger wine than say you probably don't have a lot of Moselle Riesling on the list.
No. Yeah, you're right. A lot of like fuller bodied whites for sure. I remember I had one guest come in and be like, oh, well, we're going to do all Bordeaux tonight, including Bordeaux whites. And I was like, actually, like we have a limited, because it was a larger party. I'm like, we have a limited quantity of Bordeaux whites, because he's like, what? How's that possible? I'm like, nobody orders them.
No.
Nobody orders them.
Bordeaux so white. Sorry. Finish.
I mean, that was essentially it.
Yeah. Well, no, I've started to drink a little bit more of it. And Bordeaux white's delicious. And for people that don't know, listen, 95% of you do, but just it's a Sauvignon Blanc with a blend of Semillon, some
oaked usually.
Usually oaked, and it's so different than New Zealand.
Oh like, yeah,
so big different time. Than New Zealand, and it's great. But yeah, there's not a huge market for it, so
different from Sancerre.
Yeah.
Right.
And so, oh, yeah.
Like, you know, which is not too far off when you're talking about global perspective.
Yeah. But just a couple, about a 4.5 hour drive north.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's totally different.
What's the most, and I always, you know, regret sometimes asking the specific questions because it's more tricky, but do you have any memories of like some of the most funky, interesting, or just, whoa, I can't believe I'm opening this bottle of wine at George, or not George.
At Harbor. Yeah.
At Harbor 60.
Well, I don't know if this might make you hate me. I've opened every first growth like many a times.
Nice.
Many a times.
How many times do you get to get a little sip on the end?
Often.
Nice.
Like I often.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like very often. I don't know if, I wouldn't say weekly, but like, I don't know. Just to be safe so that my friends who know that I like to accidentally exaggerate, won't give me a hard time. Probably monthly.
Yeah.
I get to try a first growth, if not a few.
Do you have a favorite? And it's an odd question because, I mean, listen, they're all incredibly well-made wines. But I'll talk for a couple seconds to give you a moment. Please. I remember the best one I ever tried. Like I tried like a 72 Mouton Rothschild, which is crazy. But I think my favorite was a 2000 Margaux. And it just, in Willy Wonka, when they have the pill that you have an entire meal and like, oh, it's salad. Now it's mashed potatoes. Now it's roast beef. Now it's, you know, it's and like blueberry pie. That was my thought with the 2000 Margaux. Cause as I'm sipping it, I'm like, you're this, now you're this, now you're the, oh my God, you're all these things. What's going on? Yeah. So that's what that's actually what I compared it to.
Yeah. I feel terrible. My answer is going to disappoint you, like dramatically.
No, it's not. No, well, it might.
No, it will. Especially because we're talking about having like respect for everything that goes into wine. Often when you're drinking these situations, the Harbor 60 is a very busy restaurant.
Yeah.
It's really expensive, but it's really like high end, but it is very busy. Like it's insane volumes for the type of restaurant it is. And often when you're getting to try these things, your guest is so kind to be like, drink this, pour this glass here, do this. And they're like, drink it. You haven't had a sip yet because you're running around and you're just taking these sips and it's not.
Oh, no. I am disappointed.
No, it is disappointing. And like you sit down, it's not like, and at the end of the night, you try and save a little bit.
Yeah.
And hope that no one pours that glass out by accident. Oh. So you can like sit down and like just take a second to like really appreciate it.
Yeah.
But it goes so fast. But obviously none of them are bad.
Yeah.
They're pretty special. They're pretty special wines. But if I could tell you right now which one's my favorite, it's not like drinking at home.
Yeah.
When you can appreciate it a little more.
By the way, what I love is at this moment right now, your wonderful husband, Tim Bolin, the star of Morning Live, is going upstairs. He's taking your kids to bed. Night, guys.
Good night, guys.
And again, happy birthday.
Hey Gabe. Happy birthday, buddy.
Happy birthday, Gabe. Love the John Tavares jersey. Oh, that's so cute. This is a perfect transition. You have your own wine company.
Mm-hmm.
You work at Harbor 60.
Yeah.
You have three children.
Yeah.
You are the outlier.
Yeah.
You know what? Let me ask you the same question I asked Ann Sperling. You know, have you seen an episode of Game of Thrones?
I've seen Game of Thrones.
Okay. Like, how much do you sleep?
I sleep very little. Mm-hmm. Very little. When I'm working, I sleep 2 to 4 hours a night. So that's like 4 or 5 days a week. But even then, it's normally towards 2. As opposed to towards 4. It used to be more towards 4. So it's you know, I don't sleep very much. But on the plus side, I get to kind of live 2 lives. I get to be a mom all day.
Yeah.
I have one, my oldest just started kindergarten this year, so that's been a new change where she's in school. But this summer, as an example, I had all 3 kids, because I have a 4-year-old, a 3-year-old, and a 10-month-old. So this summer, we were all together the whole time, which is great. I get to see them grow up. And then at 3 o'clock, that's when my husband gets home from work.
Mm-hmm.
That's when my daughter finishes school, and that's when I leave for work. So I drive the other 2 kids to the school. My husband and I swap cars and kids. I head off to work, and then I have a full life at work.
Yeah.
And being in the restaurant business, it's so social. Like, all of my best friends work there, too. Mm-hmm. So it's... I get it all. I get all my friends, my family, my work. And then my wine business is amazing because Harbor 60 fills so many like check marks, but nothing's going to fill it all. And the wine business fills everything else in. So it's perfect.
Damn, that is busy. Really good.
But I'm tired.
Oh, yeah.
I can't wait to see what I look like if I get like 8 hours sleep. Like, I feel like I'd look so fresh.
It looks like
I look so young.
I'll give you this. You do not have the under eye of someone who gets 3 hours sleep.
Thank you. I put makeup on just before you got here.
So you want to try the final one? And then also I do have a question involving your husband.
Yes.
Who works on Morning Live.
Yeah.
And the one thing I've noticed, because a lot of the people I've interviewed,
yeah,
every now and then they go on these morning shows.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's either rosés or sipping wines for the summer or Valentine's Day, spring, all that sort of stuff. And the one thing I love, morning show hosts get so intimidated. Yeah. I have watched this where, and I don't know if you ever seen this or you giggle at this. Like I was interviewing Alison Vidug, who is the head of the wine program, the Shore Club, and she was talking about the wine. And then she handed it to the morning show host. It might have been on Morning Live. Yeah. And you could see them almost like nervous to grab it or sip it because they don't want to say the wrong thing or do the wrong thing. Like, it is funny.
For sure. Well, the thing about earlier today, I was talking about how my hands shake when we're tasting wines.
Yeah.
And I know what I'm talking about. And so I could feel like if you don't know what you're talking about, it's like the equivalent of me passing my mom a glass of wine and being like, Mom, what do you think?
Yeah.
What are you tasting now?
And it's live on air.
Yeah. And you have 2 minutes.
Yeah.
But it must feel like forever.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I love watching those segments.
Yeah.
Because they're in their world for the most part, and they're comfortable and they're confident. For sure. They're doing their thing.
And for the most part, they're interviewing people that aren't usually on TV.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, they're normally the one in, like, the more comfortable, like, comfort zone.
Yeah.
And then they're out of their comfort zone. But luckily, my husband drinks a lot of wine, so.
Oh, no. I've seen your husband on wineries.
He's
and
probably
stuff.
Too eager.
Yeah. When I see Tim on, I'm like, you son of a bitch. He's like, hey, here I am at Southbrook and we're going to drink wine. I'm like, you jerk.
Yeah.
But in the studio, it's different. So the final wine, it's Etna.
Yeah, it's an Etna Rosso. So Toron Torre is the producer here. And I'm not even going to try doing this one here.
The title?
Yeah. Trimachisa.
You really
I should have practiced before then.
You petered out. You want me to try to make yourself look better?
Okay.
So of course we're drinking an Etna Rosso 2014. And of course this is the Trimachia. No,
I didn't do it. No. I screwed that up.
I'll look at it again a little bit.
Yeah.
Do you know what the grapes are? Sorry,
yeah, Nero Mascalese.
Okay.
Mostly, I don't know this particular breakdown. It might be on the back of the bottle, but it'll be predominantly Nero Mascalese.
Which is very common. Like this is a grape from Etna.
Native grape from Etna, which for those of you that don't know is a region on Mount Etna, which is a volcano in Sicily. So it's pretty special, an active volcano at that too. And then the primary, so that'll be the primary grape, and the secondary grape will be Nerello Cappuccino. Mm-hmm. Will be that case. So it's kind of like a Cab and a Merlot style. So the Nerello Nerello Mescalese will be thicker skin. It'll be fuller, it'll be riper, it'll be more tannin. And then the cappuccino, the Nerello cappuccino would be like thinner skin, but adds a little more finesse, rounds things out a little bit. So that's what you have in this bottle. I'm just going to look at the back.
Expressive, slightly, expressive red fruit, cooked, a little bit cooked.
I was
red
about
fruit.
To say, slightly cooked too. Yeah. This I just looked at the back, and this is 95% Nerello Mescalese.
Okay.
And then, 5% Nerello cappuccino. But yeah, cooked fruit, like dry desiccated fruit. Nice bright, it's red fruit driven, some black fruit in there too,
a little bit of spice,
almost a little bit of a little bit of plum.
A little bit. It's such a popular, like Etna 5 years ago, I don't think anyone was talking about
that. No, now it's like the hipster wine.
It really is, but it's a damn good wine.
It's lovely.
Unfortunately, it'll just keep going up in price.
Yeah, I know. Just buy it up now.
Yeah,
I've got a lot downstairs. I actually need to show you the cellar downstairs, but I have a good amount of Etna downstairs. Because the same thing, I think as more people know about it, it's going to get more expensive. But I also think that this will go well with time. It will get better with time. But you just reminded me of a story.
Yeah, go.
One day I was listening to your podcast, and it must have been over the Christmas holidays or something. We were driving back from Ottawa. I was driving. The kids were asleep, and then my husband nodded off. And I was like, sweet, wine podcast time. And I forget who you're interviewing at the time, so forgive me. But you were talking about like, oh, this Italian wine label, and it has cursive writing on it. And both of you were like drawing the blank on what it was. And I was like, hands at 10 and 2.
And
I'm
knew.
On the 4-1. And suddenly my face is like so close to the steering wheel. And like initially I'm like, it's Quintrelli. It's Quintrelli.
Oh.
And then eventually I'm like, it's Quintrelli. And
oh,
like,
yes.
My husband wakes up. He's like, what?
What?
What's wrong? I was like, it's Quintrelli.
Here's the sad thing. I remember that moment, but I forget who the guest was.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah,
oh, yeah. I totally remember that.
But it's the same thing. It just draws a blank. And I know you know Quintrelli. We all know Quintrelli. But
yeah.
But I was just like, saying, like, it's Quintrelli.
Oh,
and
that's...
then I woke, thankfully not the kids up. I woke my husband up and he promptly went back to sleep. So it was good. So I got to keep listening. But
one thing you mentioned before, like before we started, and I found it really interesting, because the Keg and Harbor 60 could not be more different.
They both sell steak.
They both
They've
sell
got that
steak,
in common. Yeah.
But you know, one is there's one of it. The other's
one's
a brand.
Chains,
one's a chain. Yeah,
owned.
Yeah. They're very different. They both do very good things. Their job in the ecosystem of restaurants, they both do very well. But the one thing you said that was common is that no one leaves either one of them. I was wondering.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I was wondering if you could sort of talk about that a little bit, because restaurants. It's such a transient. People are bouncing around
big
all
time.
Over the place.
Yeah, big
like
time.
One, a friend of mine who, Bree, who I interviewed, and you know, we were in class together. You know, she worked at some of the top sort of spas. I'm trying to remember Langdon Hall.
Langdon
she
Hall.
Worked at Langdon
nice.
Hall, George, and is now over at Fogo Resort. I hope the island, like in Newfoundland, like
yep,
right on the
yep.
like one of the most
beautiful.
Expensive resorts in North America,
beautiful.
Right on the edge of the world. So she moved to three really all
three amazing places,
and she did that. But why is it at the Keg and that Harbor 60 that there is a high retention level?
Well, I've had more time to think. So I was at the Keg for I want to say 9 years.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe 10 years, but let's say 9 years.
Yeah.
And I've been at Harbor for 8. And which is kind of crazy. Either I'm super loyal, but I'm not alone in those kinds of numbers. I can tell you about the Keg for sure. The Keg is really good at developing a community and really good at training their staff. And the staff all hang out after work. And it just literally the staff date the staff and then end up marrying the staff. Like I met my husband at the Keg.
He wasn't staff though.
Yeah, he was staff.
Was too.
He
I didn't know.
Was
wait,
staff.
I didn't know that.
He was staff.
Oh.
He was a server who one time years later he said to me, he's like, yeah, sometimes guests were so uptight. I remember one time like I didn't change their glasses and they were so upset like because they were going from red to a white and they were so upset. I was like, okay,
you.
Well, you change their glasses when they're going from red to a white.
Yes. Like, he's white to red, fine. Though you should still probably change it, fine.
Yeah.
But if you're going from a red to a white, you've got to change
it. In a restaurant, you should change it just for like the appeal. At home, to be honest, the truth is if you have a white wine, you should it's been treated by the white wine. So you should actually just pour red wine right into that.
Yeah.
But at a restaurant for a show, and because people don't know that, you should change all the glasses. But anyways, yes, I met my husband at the Keg. He is no longer in the restaurant business. He has moved on to other things.
Yes, we worked. We worked together.
Yep,
many years at the casino at Sun TV.
Yep,
Casino Rama Grill Room and all that kind of stuff. And now he's on Morning Live.
So the keg is really good at training staff and creating this atmosphere that you never want to leave. And Harbor 60 also, the bond, I think comes down to the bond between staff, because the staff, it's just such a great place to work in the sense where you all get to know each other for so long and you help one another and support one another. And if somebody's sick or something tragic happens and you can't work for a while, everyone just pays for that person.
Really?
Everyone just puts money in a fund and you know, to try and relieve some stress off. It's a really nice environment.
That's fantastic.
They're different environments, but they're both really great in their own way, for sure.
That's great. Before we end, because we've already... Yeah, we're at 50 minutes, so we've already gone a little bit. We've already gone a little
bit. Nobody
heavy.
Wants to hear me talk for that long.
No, are you kidding? I could show you my notes, and I still have a bunch of questions we're not going to get to, including I just wrote the word because I did these notes on Friday night as I was drinking alone because my girlfriend had fallen asleep. Nice. So I was actually drinking Burgundy and then coming up with these questions. That I didn't even remember I wrote this one. I just wrote Cremant with five explanations. You could see right there, like. That's one of my questions, was just that. And I want, at some point...
Yes, I agree. Cremant is amazing.
Yeah. At one point, I want to talk about, because you wrote about wax on top of wines.
Yes.
We don't have time for that. We'll get to that another time. Because I'm annoyed to hell with wax on the top of wines. It bugs the shit out of me. But I just want to end with this. I want to go back to your company. Where, first off, how can people access ED Wine Company? And where would you like to see the company in a couple of years from now?
So two ways. You can access me through Instagram, so at edwineco, or online at www.edwine.ca. And right now I'm really happy with where the business is going. It's a nice steady growth. It's already in the subscription type business. I am doing training for staff for other people as well, which is really great, and doing private orders for clients, which is really nice. Where will it go in the future? I will get there. Right now, I'm kind of at a stage where I'm trying to debate on how much emphasis do I want to delve forward? Do I want to wait till the kids are a little older?
Yeah.
But definitely to keep going in the world of wine. Eventually down the road, I don't know if you, I feel like you're an intelligent man, so you probably don't have this, but I grew up with a learning disability. So when I'm trying to read, it's a struggle for me. And I feel like a lot of people in the restaurant business, which often translates into the wine business, they also have a struggle with more generic styles of academics. So I want to get all the wine books onto audiobooks.
Oh.
All the wine books onto audiobooks. So maybe one day down the future I can start on that venture. Because if I could drive, or even like for parents who don't necessarily get to read anything other than ABCs and colors and shapes.
Yeah.
You know, when I'm driving to work, if I could be listening to a wine book, that would be amazing.
Oh my God. Yeah. Like just get... Hey, you just called Jancis. Hey, yeah, Jancis.
She's number one. I'm like, hey.
Hey, Jancis.
How would you like to make more money?
Oh, wow. What a great idea.
Yeah. I don't know. Down the road, that's like a long term. But
yeah.
But really just I love wine. And it's silly because I know there are more noble things out there. But
the other people.
Yeah. What I can do is have people over and serve food and open wine. And if I can't actually be in your house, at least I can send the wine and I can tell you a little bit about it and I can tell you what you might want to serve with it. And then I want to hear back how you like it or if you don't. And it just, you know, wine brings people together and I just want this to be another way to bring people together.
Oh, that's fantastic. One last time, if people want to get a hold of ED Wine Company.
Yeah, at ED Wine Co. on Instagram or www.edwine.ca.
Liz, thank you so much.
Thank you, Matt.
This has been fantastic.
You're amazing.
And
thank you.
There's cheese and meat out that, you know, I snuck a little bit of the blue cheese with the shard. It was great.
Bless your heart. I'm glad you went for the blue.
Oh, yeah. I always always start there. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Matt. You're great.
Thanks for everyone for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Remember, you can find it on Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, Audio Boom, wherever good podcasts are sold.
Thanks for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Happy hunting.